Hello everyone, my name is Dave and I am a compulsive overeater and a facilitator for this two-hour workshop about the 12 traditions. This workshop is being recorded and I would like to include the question and answer session at the end. So if you do not want to share your name during that portion, that is okay. I will, however, stop the recording at 2 hours. My facilitators know this, but anyone else that would like to say something during the meeting, like the end, can hit *6 like at a normal meeting. There are six of us presenting our knowledge and experience regarding the 12 traditions today. We are Larice W. with 1 and 2, Roberta S. presenting 3 and 4, John U. is doing 5, I am doing 6 and 12, Linda M. is presenting 7, 8, and 9 and may pick up 4, and Jack C. is doing 10 and 11. This is how the format of the panel will go. I'll start with a brief history of the traditions and why I consider them the life of the fellowship. We will then begin presenting each tradition in order following this format. The presenter will introduce themselves with a length of abstinence and sponsorship level, perhaps some of their service experience. They will read the short form from the table of contents, then share about their tradition using passages from the write-up in 12 and 12, and they will share along the following lines: how the tradition affects and can be used by groups, and also how it can be used by CHOW as a whole, or is used, and time permitting, how we apply this tradition to our lives. Speaking of time, each presenter has about 8 minutes, and I'll keep time and inform them when 3 minutes and 1 minute remain. At the end of each presentation, the next panelists will introduce themselves and begin, so forth and so on. If need to, I'll prompt. Finally, when reading directly from AA literature, we will not change the wording, so please, for yourselves, substitute the words food, compulsive eater, and CHOW for alcoholic, alcoholic, and Alcoholics Anonymous. One last caveat, I am in the Navy, and I am the command duty officer today. A fellow officer is covering me, but just in case there's a major emergency, I may have to step away, but I don't think I'm so integral that you can't run this thing without me, so just proceed as briefed. Same thing, if I lose cell coverage out here, I'll just log back in and see if I was missed, which I probably won't be. So I'm going to talk about the reason I chose the Life of the Fellowship as the title of this panel is from the foreword of the 12 and 12, and this is what it reads. AA's 12 traditions apply to the life of the fellowship itself. They outline the means by which AA maintains its unity and relates itself to the world about it, the way it lives and grows. AA found that the startling expansion that it experienced in the early days brought with it severe growing pains. Proof that alcoholics could recover had been made, but it was by no means sure that such great numbers of yet erratic people could live and work together with harmony and good effect. Everywhere there arose threatening questions of membership, money, personal relations, public relations, management of groups, clubs, and scores of other perplexities. It was out of this vast welter of explosive experience that AA's 12 traditions took form and were first published in 1946 and later confirmed at AA's first international convention in 1950. That publication was a 1946 article in the Grapevine by Bill W., and I'm going to read a couple excerpts from that as well. And Bill says, almost any AA can tell you what our group problems are. Fundamentally, they have to do with our relationships, one with the other and the world outside. They involve relations of the AA to the group to Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole, and the place of Alcoholics Anonymous in the troubled sea called modern society. Terribly relevant is the problem of our basic structure and our attitude toward those ever-pressing questions of leadership, money, and authority. The future may well depend on how we feel and act about things that are controversial and how we regard our public relations. Our final destiny will surely hang upon what we presently decide to do with these danger, fraught issues. I think that as we move forward in any, definitely any 12-step organization and ours itself, that the traditions are not some binding, restrictive laws. They are merely suggestions, but suggestions won through years of experience. And I've seen Sihau use these traditions in various ways. And I think the more we know about them, just like the more I know about the steps, it can help my life. The more that I know about the traditions, it can help my life, and it can help the fellowship. I need this fellowship. It saved my butt. I need it around, and the traditions help it to stay around. It's truly the life of the program. So without further ado, we'll move into tradition one, and let me introduce Larice W. Larice, take it away.
Okay, wonderful. Hi, everyone. My name is Larice, and I am a food inventory and step sponsor. I have a recommitment abstinence of 86 days, that's since May 5th, 2018, and I've been in CEA House since 2005. So grateful for CEA House. So, tradition one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity, and I think actually our CEA House, our Commonwealth should come first. Personal recovery depends upon CEA How Unity. Okay. I'd like to read some passages from this and then put it into context for us and answer the questions that we've been asked to make it relevant for us to see how as a group and how it can be used by groups. The unity of Alcoholics Anonymous is the most cherished quality our society has. Our lives, the lives of all to come, depend squarely upon it. We stay whole, or AA dies. Without unity, the heart of AA would cease to beat. Our willed arteries would no longer carry the life-giving grace of God. His gift would be spent aimlessly. Back again in their caves, alcoholics would reproach us and say, what a great thing AA might have been. So if we do not hang together as a group, if we can't create, I even think what's greater about CEA How is that we have love encoded into our literature at least a couple of times. And, you know, by creating this loving, unified space, we believe there isn't a fellowship on earth which lavishes more devoted care upon its individual members. Surely there is none which more jealously guards the individual's right to think, talk, and act as he wishes. No AA can compel another to do anything. Nobody can be punished or expelled. Our 12 steps to recovery are suggestions. The 12 traditions which guarantee AA's unity contain not a single don't. They repeatedly say we ought, but never you must. What I was trying to say earlier was that by creating a loving space here, first of all, it makes it a safe place for all of us. And secondly, it allows us to recover and to go forward. And if we don't have a safe place here, And the fellowship folds. I know I've been at some business meetings in another program where there was a lot of fighting. And if I wasn't the business chair, I would have left. Because, as you know, when things are not in harmony, nobody wants to be around. And one of the things they start talking about is that we, I'm going to skip forward. It says, we're in the world where we see personalities destroying. In the world about us, we saw personalities destroying whole people. The struggle for wealth, power, and prestige was tearing humanity apart as never before. If strong people were stalemated in the search for peace and harmony, what was to become of our erratic band of alcoholics? So part of what this unity does is it says to us that even though we're addicts, we're recovering from an addiction, and we've got all these crazy ego problems and character defects, that we really have to let all of that stuff go in working together. Because if somebody, and it's funny because I've heard that the steps are so that we will not commit suicide, and the traditions are so we won't commit homicide, but I think a more peaceful way to say it is that the steps are so that we can heal and recover and thrive in our life, and the traditions are so that we can work together in harmony and guarantee that our that not only is CEA How here for us, but it's here for generations going forward, so that our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren and generations to follow who have compulsive eating as an addiction can recover here.
So, yeah, Maurice, you've got 2 minutes left for this tradition.
2 minutes, okay. So how can we use this as a whole? Basically, when there's a problem with unity, to have the courage to rely on the tradition and to rely on this one, to remind people that our unity has to come first or we will all die. And it says, why do we have to conform to this? Because we all have to conform to this principle of recovery, because his life actually depends upon obedience to spiritual principles. If he deviates too far, the penalty is sure and swift. He sickens and dies. And then first he goes along because he must, but later discovers a way of life he really wants to live. Moreover, he cannot give this priceless gift unless he gives it away. Neither he nor anyone else can survive unless he carries the AA message. So once we realize this, we learn that the clamors and desires and ambitions from him within must be silenced, whenever these could damage the group. It becomes plain that the group must survive or the individual will not. So it constantly reminds us, and they give some examples, but it reminds us that we must calm whatever is upset in us so that the group can be in a better place. And we can work with our sponsors on that, and anything that bothers us, we can talk to other people, but that in group meetings that we really don't bring in ego and big challenges and arguments. And I think one of the ways that we also do this as a group is that we don't allow anyone to share unless they have 30 days of abstinence or if they have 7 days and they've talked to their sponsor. And I think that's a really important part, is that we have at least some sanity, a little bit of sanity, right? Because active people can create all sorts. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I've created a lot of problems when I was in the food. So that when we have a little bit of abstinence, we have more clarity in the way we participate. And I think that's a really good boundary to have. Okay. And how do I apply this? Is that I personally thrive in unity and peace. And so I try to bring that peace and positivity to the meetings. And again, if there's a challenge, that I try to work that out with my sponsor, or I write out my resentments. I mean, I do the step work on it, and I don't air out grievances or any problems, which, you know, usually it's me, right? The 10th step says that if we're disturbed, it's really a problem with us. So that's how I use this personally in my life, so that I can bring unity into situations. Okay, is that time for that one?
Yes, that's time. Great.
Okay, good. All right. So I'm doing tradition two also. Okay, so for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. So it goes on to say, where does AA get its direction? Who runs it? This, too, is a puzzler for every friend and newcomer. Basically, one of the things that we have no president having authority to govern it, no treasurer who can compel the payment of any dues, no board of directors who can cast an erring member into outer darkness. We can't give anyone a directive and enforce obedience. And so it talks about how we really, you know, we don't control others. We really are trusted servants. And it also goes on to explain how if someone moves to a new town and starts a meeting, then he sort of is the, you know, the boss is what they say. But then after a while, people basically, you know, the group has enough people who are going to do service, and they let the founder go as the chair. And they talk about, you know, are they going to be an elder statesman, someone who contributes in a really good way and leads by example, or are they going to be bleeding deacons, and they're going to really create a lot of problems and try to take over leadership again, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I suppose all of that is possible now, but it seems like it's part of the growing pains of the past, and we do have these to fall back on. In no sense whatever can its members govern or direct the group. They are servants. There is sometimes the thankless privilege of doing the group's chores. And this is really about giving back to the group, but not governing the group, right? And I've heard it said that really the leaders, as trusted servants, really need to take the direction of the membership. So, for example, if someone's a delegate, they really want to listen to what the group conscience is. In effect, we do group consciences in everything, right? When we vote in our meeting, in our business meetings, and that God is really, you know, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience, so that we're really relying on, again, these spiritual principles, like they said, we're going to live by tradition one, so that we can have unity, and then that spiritual unity is going to show itself in our group consciences. And so occasionally, there will be a group conscience. Maybe there's a few people and it's not a great thing, but those can always be revoted, you know, so that the group conscience can change, or just like they did in these traditions, they made mistakes and then they were able to change things. Okay, so, and then they talk about, you know, the chairman, you know, they talk about the different roles and what they might do, what the chairman and what the treasurer or the secretary might do, what the, But these are simple services that enable the group to function. The committee gives no spiritual advice, judges no one's conduct, issues no orders. Every one of them may be promptly eliminated at the next election if they try this. And so they make the belated discovery that if they're really servants, not senators. And these are universal experiences. The group conscience decrees the terms upon which leaders shall serve. So it's really calling us again to have our ego be very, you know, to be, for all of us to have the humility to not only have a spiritual growth and experience ourselves, but to bring that into the group. That it's not really about, well, I'm leading this group and blah, 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 blah. And what I will say, sometimes there's a challenge getting trusted servants, but also just for all of us to remember that it's so good for our own recovery. And it's one of the insurances we have against picking up the food is doing service. Okay, let's see what else they're saying here. That So thank you. So Bill was offered actually to work as a professional. Well, actually, they were going to call him a lay minister and have him work in a hospital. And he was going to take it, and it's kind of like tradition seven also, or some other traditions in terms of money, but the group conscience spoke, and they said, Bill, you can't do this, and having always said that sometimes the good is the enemy of the best, and so he obeyed them. He said, you know, there was the true voice welling up out of my friends. I listened, and thank God I obeyed. And they said, you're going to ruin this, Bill. And So I want to encourage everybody, as difficult as it is sometimes, and I found it very challenging to speak up when there was some real insanity going on, and I had to remind people of traditions, and it was challenging. But we do this, just like this group Conscious, they spoke up against Bill. And he said at first it was difficult, and then the guy's voice got more clear, is that we're doing this for our own survival and for the survival of the fellowship going forward. So that when, you know, when there needs to be a group conscience about, you know, on anything, anyone can bring it up, and that our ultimate authority is the loving God, that none of us are you know, leaders and you know, having, you know, ruling over other people. And again, that, I think that brings us, I think everything is built on tradition one with this unity. It's all about creating this unity. Whereas that it's safe. It's like nobody's going to tell us what to do. We, you know, the food is going to tell us, you know, it's going to make us surrender, right? And I think that's the same in my life. It's like, I mean, I don't know about you, but I had a lot of resistance to everything. Don't tell me what to do. You know, I had to be beaten into submission by the food, not by another person. And my sponsor likes to say, you know, we've been beaten up enough by the food. We don't need to be beaten up by others. You know, so we're kind and loving here, and we create this unified space so that we're all humble before God, because it's that spiritual path that we're on together, so that we can all recover together. Thank you. Create a safe place for each other. And see, how do I apply this to my life? Well, the first thing that came to mind, actually, is that I got kicked out of a group, actually, because I did speak up about something that was not good. And the leadership decided that I shouldn't be there. And, you know, that's not what happens here. We can speak our minds in a business meeting, and it doesn't matter if people don't agree with us. We can't be kicked out. Nobody can decree anything. And, you know, that's such a, oh, it's so nice, as long as someone's going to talk on Tradition 3 next, but so long as I think I need to be here, and I call, you know, I decide, I, you know, nobody can, you know, we just follow spiritual principles. Nobody can ask me to leave. So I'm just very, very grateful for these traditions, because they've saved my life see how being here. And I think that, you know, our job is to, you know, read them and study them and use them in our home groups so that the group stays healthy, so that we're all have a safe place to recover. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you so much.
Reese, thank you so much for sharing today. So Roberta is online, and she's ready to do Traditions 3 and 4. Take it away, Roberta.
Thanks, David. Hi, everybody. I'm Roberta. I'm a compulsive eater from Orange County, California, and I'll be presenting on Traditions 3 and 4. Just to give a little background, I've been in program about 11 and a half years. My current date of abstinence is February 9th, 2018. I'm a food inventory step and maintenance sponsor. And just to give you a little window into my world, I am at the moment sitting in my car in a parking lot. It's about 10:30 a.m. on a Sunday morning. It is 95 degrees outside, and I have the air conditioning on. So that's the world I'm looking at as I'm talking to you today. So first tradition, Tradition 3. The only requirement for CEHAL membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. The long form of that tradition is, our membership ought to include all who suffer from compulsive eating. Hence, we may refuse no one who wishes to recover. Nor ought CEHAL membership ever depend upon money or conformity. Any two or three compulsive eaters gathered together for abstinence may call themselves a CEHAL group, provided that, as a group, they have no other affiliation. So my thoughts on that are, again, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. It doesn't mean that you actually do have abstinence. You can be a member of CEHAL even if you have never attained a long or short-term period of abstinence. And no one else decides if you are a member other than you. You get to decide that. So I think, to me, this is a reminder that as a fellowship, membership is not based on you having a certain number of days of abstinence. One way I see this affect our fellowship is in our PhoneBridge business meetings. We have about over 50 phone bridge meetings a week that anybody can call into. And each of those meetings decides when its own business meeting will be. Some have it every month, some have it quarterly. But in those meetings, issues are discussed, and every member of CHOW is allowed to have their say. There is no abstinence requirement to talk or to vote at a business meeting. All members have a right to have their say. Again, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. And that brings me to my next point, which I kind of summarize in the catchphrase, membership has its privileges. So what does CHOW membership in our fellowship provide? Well, it provides the ability to participate in meetings. All of us can listen and hear great living examples of people who have shown it can be done. You can also speak, assuming you have 30 days of abstinence or 7 days if your sponsor has approved. You can also read, regardless of your level of abstinence, and you can attend those business meetings, which, as I mentioned before, everybody has a voice and a vote to influence what we do in this fellowship. Membership allows us to make phone calls to perfect strangers in some cases and receive phone calls from compulsive eaters and share experience, strength, and hope. Membership gives me the right to have a sponsor, somebody who gives me 15 minutes a day, every single day, and listens to me, and when I ask for it, provides perspective on whatever issues I'm going through. It also gives me and us, membership, the ability to have sponsees, which is the awesome privilege to have somebody actually want what we have, and we get to give away what we've been given so that we can keep it. Membership also teaches us how to journal. Every day, we have questions that we get to answer that are likely to be the key to understanding more about ourselves and thereby find relief from compulsive eating. We may all be compulsive eaters, but the reasons behind that are specific to each one of us. And it's a journey that I and my sponsor and my higher power, we all make it. It's a different journey, but the key to unlock that mystery in each of us is willingness. I also, in membership, get the ability to serve. There are lots of ways our fellowship needs help. And as our literature says, service is freedom from bondage of self. And so here's a ready-made opportunity to get out of myself. I also get to practice in this membership anonymity. I am given the opportunity to practice anonymity. Now, when I came in, I had no idea. I couldn't even say the word, let alone actually really understand. I knew the definition of it, but what does that really mean? In this fellowship, we learn how important and sacred it is to both our fellowship and ourselves. And just real quick, there is some background noise. If everybody could make sure they're muted, that would be great.
I just buzzed in to let you know we have 3 minutes.
Thank you so much, David. We also get, as a privilege of membership, we get access to a ton of workshops and speakers from other compulsive eaters who have found their way out of their eating disorder into a life beyond their dreams. And if you don't know that, if you go to our CHOW website, there are a ton of audio downloads that has convention speakers and workshops going back to 2010, and a ton of phone bridge workshops and forums on things like how to travel abstinently, how to stay abstinent over the holidays, how to be a sponsor. So all of these membership privileges allow me to be able to live long-term in a normal-sized body, and also get a host of friends and find new meaning in my life and a deeper connection to my higher power. All of this for no membership dues. Now, if we choose to give, we can, and absolutely the fellowship needs it. But if you have no money, you still get the benefits of membership. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop eating compulsively. And again, membership has its privileges. And the last point I want to make on this tradition is that many people come into this program with multiple addictions. We may be compulsive eaters, but we may also be alcoholics and drug addicts and gamblers and sex addicts and hoarders. And some of us have mental issues, and this may show up in how we talk and how we act. So early on in the fellowship of AA, they tried to keep AA pure, meaning only alcoholics, none of those other things. But they learned by trial and error, no, the only requirement for membership is a desire, in our case, to stop eating compulsively. Now, I'll be honest, there are times when there have been fellows, my fellows in this program, that have exhibited those behaviors associated with other addictions and things. I have not liked it. I have wanted to run away. I have hung up on occasion from phone bridges because I didn't want to have to be faced with that stuff. But it's about principles before personalities. And again, in the long form of this tradition, it says, hence we may refuse none who wish to recover. Hence we may refuse none who wish to recover. And so I've learned to stay, and I've learned acceptance, and I pray. Thanks so much. And one last thing, too. Nothing in this tradition says anyone has to identify themselves as a compulsive eater. I have to admit, when I came into these rooms, I didn't like that phrase. Why didn't I like it? I don't know. It sounded negative or bad or weird or nothing I wanted to admit about myself. But I remember one member years ago refused to say that, like to say, hi, I'm Susie, I'm a compulsive eater. And she felt bad about it. And one day she called me, and I'm going to go a little bit long, just like another 30 seconds beyond my 1 minute. So one day at an outreach call, she called me, and she said, you know, gosh, I don't think I can stay in this fellowship because I won't identify myself as a compulsive eater. I think, to be honest with you, it has something to do with her belief that if you say something negative about yourself, you draw negative energy from the universe. So for her, it was important never to say that. And whereas many people do not think of it negatively, she did, and so she had a right to her thoughts and feelings. And I said, well, you don't have to say you're a compulsive eater. This tradition says the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. You don't have to identify yourself as a compulsive eater, and that brought her peace. So with that, those are my thoughts on Tradition 3, and I will move on now to Tradition 4. Tradition 4 is each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or see how as a whole. Now, I have to admit, most of the times I've come across the application of this tradition has been, and this is just my perception, some effort of the Phone Bridge Executive Committee to make all the Phone Bridge meetings do things in a particular way. Here's an example that I've seen actually played out. This is not hypothetical. I've actually lived through this. Let's say that someone volunteered to stay after a meeting to help answer questions for the newcomer and returnee. And during that time, maybe that volunteer said something that somebody else didn't like. Maybe the volunteer who was facilitating the after meeting, maybe they didn't immediately ask, are there any newcomers or returnees, but they went immediately to, hey, anybody who doesn't have 30 days of abstinence and couldn't speak at the meeting, you want to share now? And let's say there were a bunch of people that put their hand up and wanted to speak, and the end result was that nobody answered the questions of the newcomers and the returnees. So let's just say that some of those other people who were listening didn't like that, and they said, that's not right. Newcomers and returnees should be helped first. There ought to be a script for people to follow, they think, for people to run the after meeting. So they contact the Phone Bridge Executive Committee and say, this is what we should do. And the people on the Phone Bridge Executive Committee, who are, by the way, compulsive eaters, just like all of us, they are volunteers, they are servants, they do not govern, they do not paid, they are not paid. They volunteer their own time, a lot of their own time, to do the service. But they get the request, and they say, yeah, that's a good idea. And so at the next intergroup meeting, they raise the issue. And some of the other intergroup reps say, yeah, I've seen that happen. Newcomers and returnees are not given the priority that they should have. So a few people volunteer, I'll write a script about what the person leading the after meeting should say. So they go away, and they spend hours on this. They create the script. And then they draft the script and they send it back to the Phone Bridge Executive Committee, who then sends it out to all the intergroup reps and say, hey, we're thinking of putting this in place. Let's talk about it at the next intergroup meeting. And then at the next intergroup meeting, they talk about it. And again, the purpose is we think we should give this to all the meetings so that the after meeting, this is the script that's followed. And somebody speaks up and says, I don't think it is the place of the Phone Bridge Executive Committee or the intergroup to tell an individual meeting how they should run their after meeting. After all, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups to see how as a whole. You cannot tell a group what to do. Yeah, but, everybody else replies, not everybody, but some people reply, people aren't doing it right. Newcomers and returnees might not get the help they need. We need this. And ultimately a vote is taken. And in the cases that I've lived through, usually the fellowship elects not to tell an individual meeting what it must do, but it suggests and then it leaves it up to each meeting to decide how it's going to run its own after meeting. Now, me personally, early in the fellowship, I was definitely more in the camp of, it's not right, we need to fix it. But nowadays, in the last couple years, I really have veered toward, you know what, let each group decide. Each group has the right to be wrong. And if a group makes the wrong decision, they can always change it back. So that's one example. But let me take a different example now. Again, the tradition is each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or see how it's a whole. This one is a real-life example I've encountered as well. It has to do with Facebook. Facebook is a great way to connect with people. Many, many people use Facebook, and many of those people are compulsive eaters. So I totally get it, that we want to get our message out to where compulsive eaters are. However, in the course of posting some Facebook sites, some people have posted the name Seahow with their actual photos and their full name. Now, just so you know, our fellowship has a principle, Tradition 11, that will be talked about later today that says our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication, end quote. Plus, Seahow itself has public information guidelines on the website, and in there it says, our tradition of anonymity acts as a restraint on Seahow members, reminding us that we are a program of principles, not personalities, and that no individual Seahow member may presume to act as a spokesman or leader of our fellowship. Therefore, if any Seahow member is identified in the media, we ask that you please use first names only, like Judy L. or Tom F., and that you do not use photographs or electronic images in which members' faces may be recognized. Please note that, quote, public media of communication, end quote, does include personal means of internet social networking, such as YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. We ask that if you do reference your recovery and or your weight loss on your personal social networking site, please do not mention... Thanks, David. Please do not mention Seahow, end quote. But as I said, the reality is, if you go to Facebook and you look up Seahow, you will, in some cases, not only see photographs, but people's full names. So in that situation, we're left with a contradiction, a guideline that suggests we do not do something, but the reality is that some groups are not conforming. Now, what's the risk of all that? What's the risk of our fellowship? Well, I would say the impact is one of those people slips. There are people that never come into our fellowship but might watch those other people, and if there's a slip, they won't come in at all. Now, let me give you a personal example. I was abstinent for 9.5 years, and I had a slip. And when I did, I had to tell several of my friends, old-timers, and several of them were shocked. They were like, how? What happened? And I think the reason was, if I could slip, they could slip. And they wanted to make sure they never did that. Now, it was hard on old-timers. How much harder is it on people that have never come in to look and say, well, that doesn't work, and never even come in? So, again, personal anonymity at the level of public media is, I think, important. So that's the risk. So in this specific example, I don't have a resolution to this issue of the contradiction that I just described. I only have the tradition and the understanding that everybody and every group has the right to be wrong. But I have a hope and a higher power that maybe through the use of this workshop, and maybe people didn't realize it, that's all good. My recovery depends on this. The people, places, things, and situations, God uses all of this in my recovery, including the traditions. And with that, I pass. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Thanks a lot, Roberta. Appreciate it. Next is John Yu, number 5.
Hi, I'm John Yu, compulsive eater, living in Independence, Missouri, presenting Tradition 5. I've been a member of CEA House since June 26, 2014, and by the grace of God, abstinent since July 17, 2014, releasing 105 pounds in program and 150 pounds overall. I'm a food inventory step and maintenance sponsor. Tradition 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive eater who still suffers. My job is to discuss how this tradition can be used by groups. The primary purpose of any 12-step group is to carry its message and give comfort to others who are still suffering. This is spelled out in Tradition 5. Individual members bring their own needs into the 12-step rooms, and each person will progress through the journey of recovery at their own pace. Everyone is different. Each member has a personal reason for coming back week after week. As a group, they have but one purpose, to reach out to others who are still suffering. Their purpose is to share the experience, strength, and hope that they have found inside the rooms. An old-timer was once asked why he kept coming back after all these years. His answer was simple: because there was someone there for me when I came through the doors. This is quoted from a website, verywellmind.com. Simply said, Tradition 5 defines a group as a spiritual entity which has just one purpose. Speaking in terms of how Tradition 5 affects CHOW as a whole, Tradition 5 is a key imperative in CHOW as a whole. Not a suggestion, but an imperative. Every newcomer learns, and for some of us, it was the hard way, that the business of staying abstinent must have top priority in our lives. If we fail at that, we can't really succeed at anything else. The fifth tradition tells us in CHOW that our groups should always remember their one primary purpose, our act of sharing, that you are not alone, and there is recovery from compulsive eating, reinforces and gives life and vitality to our fellowship of the Spirit. The 12 and 12, page 151, records, it is the great paradox of AA that we know we can seldom keep the precious gift of sobriety unless we give it away. Carrying the message to the compulsive eater who still suffers makes our continued CHOW abstinence possible. Recovery, is truly said, does begin when one compulsive eater sits down with another. Thirdly, how do I use this tradition in my life? Anne Lamott wrote, "My mind is a bad neighborhood I try not to go into alone. Left to my own devices, I will allow the committee in my mind to be in session, and it will take over my thinking, and I will become that helpless, hopeless addict who was powerless over food, negativity, codependence, and all other things that enslaved me. Because Betty P. practiced Tradition 5, and told me about CEA How and invited me to a meeting. Thank you. And then she and the others in the three face-to-face Kansas City meetings carried the message that I had a disease which would kill me, but that I too could recover from my compulsive eating and could find a reprieve from my madness by working the CEA How program. Because of their love and acceptance and hugs, I stuck with it. And I followed my primary responsibility of carrying the message to others who still suffered. The AA responsibility statement became my watchword. It says, I am responsible. When anyone, anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA or CEA How always to be there. And for that, I am responsible. I honor my responsibility, and I work to maintain my recovery by immersing myself in the steps, traditions, tools, and by outreach to my fellows. Bill W., as he wrote on the AA tradition, how it developed, suggested that unity cannot automatically preserve itself. Like recovery, we shall always have to work to maintain it. Abstinence is God's gift to me, a visible reminder, thank you, that God is doing for me what I could never do for myself. Staying abstinent, then, by carrying the message that we are not alone and that there is recovery, is the most important thing I do every day. And I pass.
Thanks, John. This is Dave, compulsive eater with Tradition 6. I've been in CA How since 2007, and I have a recommitted abstinence of January 6th of 2017. I'm a food inventory and step sponsor. So I have Tradition 6. This is the short form from the table of contents. Tradition 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Experience proved that we could not endorse any related enterprise, no matter how good. We could not be all things to all men. We saw that we could not lend the AA name to any outside activity. This is from Tradition 6, the write-up. The moment we saw that we had an answer for alcoholism, it was reasonable, or so it seemed at the time, for us to feel that we might have the answer to a lot of other things. The AA groups, many thought, could go into business, might finance any enterprise, whatever, in the total field of alcoholism. In fact, we felt duty-bound to throw the whole weight of the AA name behind any meritorious causes. There was hospitals. We seriously thought of rewriting the laws of the land. It stood to reason that if alcoholism could be licked, so could any problem. Factories could cause laborers and capitalists to love each other. Our uncompromising honesty might soon clean up politics. With one arm around the shoulder of religion and the other around the shoulder of medicine, we'd resolve their differences. But what AA found at the time was that too many, you get these ego-driven, still sick alcoholics that are doing all this stuff, and next thing you know, there's all these problems with money, property, and prestige that took away from our primary purpose, which was just talked about, our primary purpose of helping that alcoholic, or for us. And I was kind of thinking, too, that if I put this into words and see how, I could think, you know, we've solved our compulsive eating and I'm living in health, so let's go in business. Let's open up hospitals. Because nobody understands, see, how compulsive eater is like a compulsive eater, right? Move over, Jenny Craig. We're taking over, you know. Not only is that, it wouldn't be, maybe if it's not free, it could be reduced price. You know, with our spiritual solutions, we could solve religious problems worldwide and on and on and on. But it, but that would only ultimately end up collapsing in on itself, just for the very reasons that I've already talked about. Just the, you know, the controversy. If I open myself up to the public and trying to solve all these problems, next thing you know, the See How name could be attributed not only with their solution, but with the failure. And with the ultimate failures, it would keep people from seeking us out and may even cause their death because we weren't responsible with the fellowship. I haven't really seen a problem with, I wasn't here in the early days of CA How. I haven't really seen a problem with this tradition at the public level. I think our public relations policy is slightly anonymous still. I remember in San Diego I was doing public information and doing health fairs, and we were representing at a smaller level See How, and we were handing out pamphlets and giving out phone numbers to the organization as a whole, but it still wasn't in public media. So, but I have seen this exemplified. I have seen the problems with money. So recently, I am a member of the executive board temporarily, and we recently had a financial decision to fund the delegates to go to the conference. And there are sort of certain groups are a little ignorant of the process, but maybe enough information wasn't released, and there's been a lot of hubbub about it. I personally, my own opinion is that it has been supported rationally, but still, when anybody introduces money into a conversation, people suddenly, the claws come out, you know, and that can take away from our unity. But in this case, the reason why this is good is that we're allowed to do this at our individual group and intergroup level. You know, we can hash it out amongst ourselves, because and it's not hurting the fellowship at all, because it's not going out to the public. We're not putting our dirty laundry out there for the world to tear down Compulsive Eaters Anonymous, so we're not really losing anything. So in that regards, we are following Tradition 6. Just got to check my time real quick. As I said, I hadn't really seen this too much as how I hadn't seen too many ego-driven things going on outside of the organization. As a personal note, though, I have to ask myself, what sort of image am I presenting to the public? Like, if I'm telling my friends and my coworkers that I'm in CA How, am I representing CA How as a responsible member? Like, I'm in the Navy. It's no secret that I weigh and measure my food. I've been doing it for a year on this ship. I'm on a new ship. The other day I was eating my food, my CEO was like, my captain was like, hey, you weigh those pepperoni? He's like, how many vegetables you got? I just want to make sure you're weighing your food. I've given no secret about my affiliation, but should I maybe lose my abstinence or such like that, or suddenly go off the deep end in other areas, that suddenly the image of See How is going to be besmirched. So I have to really ask myself, am I painting a good picture of Compulsive Eaters Anonymous How? Also, in my deep, deep personal life, when talking about my own personal growth, I have to ask myself, what am I aligning myself with? Like, I live my life a certain way, and what am I aligning myself with? Am I going to hang out with the people that party and do questionable things all the time? How does that represent my family? How does that represent me as a person? If I'm going to say I do these certain things, how does that represent me as a person? Now, I'm not a big fan of public opinion. I believe in pleasing God, but I'm also realistically aware that that my principles without have to reflect the principles within. So that's how I apply it just on that level too. Sometimes I swear like a sailor, but sometimes I've been trying to curb that, because if I say I have this spiritual belief in a higher power of my understanding, and maybe that higher power, maybe I shouldn't be talking all the smack. And finally, how am I with money, property, and prestige in my own life? Do I have the integrity to take care of the funds that I'm entrusted to in the Navy or in my personal life or in my family? How am I managing my finances properly myself, or am I running around full of pride and being causing havoc? So these are ways I apply Tradition 6 to my life. Once again, like all the other traditions, they all play into each other. Each one has a piece of the other one inside of it. And I think that this one has humility in it, has integrity, and it definitely falls under anonymity and how much I'm willing to take a backseat to my pride. So I really appreciate the opportunity to share it today, and that's it for Tradition 6. On to Tradition 7.
Hi, and good morning or good afternoon, folks. My name is Linda M. I'm a compulsive eater from San Jose, California. And I have been in CHOW for 3 years, since July of 2015, and I have got a back-to-back abstinence since January 30th of 2016. And I am currently a maintenance sponsor. I am not currently available. So, and this is step 7. And I hope I can get this all in 8 minutes, because I'm so excited about all the information with this. So in the CHOW 12 traditions, number 7 is every CHOW group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. And so what I wanted to talk about is specifically the 7th tradition as it relates to phone bridge, and then I'm going to add on a little bit about how it works within CHOW as a whole. When I look at this, what is it that we support? When I look at the script from the meetings, it says our 7th tradition tells us that every group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. The 7th tradition is the only source of income to support the phone bridge operations, sponsorship of retreats, sending Area 10 delegates to represent us at the annual business conference, and spreading the message that there is recovery from compulsive eating. Your contributions are a primary source to help CHOW to continue to function. And, you know, for a long time, actually really until I talked to a previous treasurer for the phone bridge, you know, what does that mean? What are we supporting? The phone bridge is free, right? Doesn't it say that when you call in? This is a free conference call. So what is it? Why am I sending money through PayPal? And she said, well, you know, we have a P.O. box, and we need to pay for that. And, you know, when we take PayPal, there are some fees that are incorporated with that. I'm sure that our bank that we use, you know, might have some fees. And we have a bookkeeper that manages our money. We are, you know, PhoneBridge participants, members are all over the world. And the treasurer is not necessarily someone that lives in Duarte, California, that can go to the P.O. box, that can get the 7th tradition checks and manage them. So we do have a bookkeeper that keeps track of our money. You know, we are a nonprofit 501c3. Actually, I shouldn't say that for sure. I believe we are, because you can, for donations to the convention, you could take those off your donations for taxes. So that's quite a bit, and I didn't know that. And so I'm very grateful to have the opportunity to do this. Also talks about And a part of this, our seventh tradition goes on to help. We give kind of the seventh tradition to world service. And that's, world service is like the overarching body, you know, of leadership that has been talked about in some of the previous traditions that kind of oversees, it sort of holds the traditions for all of the individual groups. And I'm going to talk about that more in traditions 8 and 9. And so what does world service do? Why are we giving our seventh tradition to world service? Well, world service is in charge of, like, the literature. So if there are situations where we have a big, let's say a run on literature, you know, probably at the new year, a lot of people are suddenly interested in CHOW and trying to use this as a diet or a New Year's resolution. And maybe there's a big run on literature. And, you know, maybe our postage doesn't quite match up with the cost that we're paying for the literature. We have to suddenly do a quick reprint of something. You know, part of that tradition that we want to carry the message that there is recovery from compulsive eating, and our contributions are primary source to help that, to help CHOW continue to function. And to the part, Area 10 delegates, we send Area 10 delegates to represent us at the annual business conference. So the business conference happens right before the convention, which was last weekend. And the Area 10 delegates represent us. Somebody was speaking before about, that doesn't relate. Let's say somebody wants to
3 minutes.
Thank you. Wants to take out some a word in the steps, or in the tradition. You know, a sponsor. Let's say they want to take out the words God. Okay, want to take the word God out of everything. That is then taken to World Service. World Service says, that's interesting. Let's see how everybody else thinks. Then comes back down to goes to the intergroup, you know, all the phone bridge meetings. And then our intergroup representatives come back. We have business meetings. What do you think? You know, do you like it? Do you not like it? And we take everybody's opinion, especially the minority opinion. If somebody really is strongly against it, that goes back to talk about it some more. And then talk about it some more. And so that is how, you know, we want a person to represent our opinions at the world service level. That, you know, there's no governing body that tells us what to do. It's our program as we want it to move or to be. Personally, when we talk about donations, personally, you know, I do a $50 monthly donation or seventh tradition through PayPal, and I'm comfortable with utilizing PayPal. And the reason I chose $50 is, you know, when I broke that down and thought about, you know, how many, you know, frou-frou drinks, coffee drinks I used to get, you know, that were $5 each, really, $5 I used to pay for that. That's only 10. And how many times did I go and get those things? Sometimes twice a day. And, you know, and so for me in the 9-step promises where it says that financial insecurity will leave us, you know, when I came here, I stopped spending money on junk. And I suddenly had a little bit more money at the end of the month. And so that's where I'm pulling up that number. You know, even drinking just a regular, thank you, plain old cup of coffee, you know, I am very happy and grateful to provide the money that I used to spend on junk to poison my body into something that's going to not only help to bring some freedom to my life and my mind and my heart, but can then give it to somebody else. And that's our 12th step. So I'm going to stop there and then move on to Tradition 8. And Tradition 8 in the See How 12 Traditions says, Compulsive Eaters Anonymous How should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. So I kind of just mentioned that, that we have a bookkeeper to take care of our finances. And the when we look at the AA traditions, that, you know, that became an important thing. You know, as a compulsive eater, I know that I am selfish, I am arrogant, and I think that my way is the best. And, you know, you cannot convince me that that's not true. And if I am told to do things a certain way, I can get rebellious and, you know, get that arrogant attitude of like, all right, we'll do it this way, but y'all know you're wrong. I will do things to sabotage the situation. Or I'll just do it my way regardless in the hopes that I can prove other people wrong. And that's not a good way to be in community with other people, people in my family, especially with people at work. And this program has given me the understanding that I am a person among persons, that I need to check my ego, I need to see where I can, you know, what is my motivation? And I'll come back to that in a minute. In the long form of Tradition 8 in the AA Big Book, it says each group, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional. We define professionalism as the occupation of counseling alcoholics for fees or for hire. Now, when I, and hire, like hiring somebody, not higher power. So I think of that as, you know, a diet plan, you know, where I would pay a professional or a group to provide me with a way to lose weight. You know, it might be Weight Watchers and maybe joining a gym, hiring a personal trainer, and having somebody give me an answer to how to solve my food problem. And this See How is not that. We are not professional. We are not nutritionists, generally speaking. And therefore, we do not charge money. And there's a freedom in that. There's a freedom that if I was charging money to be a sponsor, I believe that that would require me to have the answers and to have the right answers for how my sponsee should work this program and do these things. And going back to the 12th step, you know, my job as a sponsor is just to pass on my experience, strength, and hope in the idea that I can help somebody else stay abstinent. It's not my job to make somebody else be abstinent. This program helps me understand how to live by looking at myself, not by somebody else telling me what I'm doing wrong and how I can do things right. And I love that about this. I love that about See How, that we have the daily questions that we get to go over. So I get, you know, daily, I look at myself and my relationship to my higher power or my relationship to the world around me. And with outreach calls, you know, I get to be reminded of how to live life better or how somebody else may be having a question or a struggle. And if I have a problem, you know, people will to help point out, you know, is this your ego talking? Or, what is really your reason for doing this? So I want to go back to the volunteerism and why I did this workshop. You know, I used to do things, I used to do volunteerism. That was a big thing for me that I wanted to, I had,
3 minutes.
I didn't think I was worthy of anybody's attention or affection unless I did things. That was what I learned in my household growing up. I had to get the good grades in order to get appreciation. I had to do things so I was a human doing and not a human being. I felt like I wasn't valued for just being Linda. And for whatever little quirks I had were not really accepted. I was supposed to, you know, be this certain way, this particular child. And it didn't, you know, it was against my authentic self. And that was, you know, to mask that is how I ate and stole and lied, you know, from a very early age. And I learned that if I volunteered, if I offered to do things outside of my home, I could get acknowledgement. I could, you know, people were grateful for me. People liked to see me. And it had to do with me showing up to help them, to do something. And I, you know, I wanted that attention. I needed it. And I needed to have you tell me that I'm important, that I'm wanted, that I'm needed. And that is very manipulative. That's, I'm trying to get you to do something for me, to tell me something about myself. So, you know, I had to think about, why do I want to volunteer to do this? You know, traditions can be pretty dry, and some people are really afraid of them. And I really love the traditions. I think that they're magnificent, you know, when you look at them, how a bunch of, you know, crazy, unreliable, self-centered, irrational alcoholics came up with this plan that's so beautiful that says, we're just going to do this. Thank you. So I got to look at that and say, you know, I really want to share this. I want to share my enthusiasm about this, about the traditions, with other people. And what is my goal? It's because I think it'll be fun for me. And that's good enough. It's not because I want to make people do things. I didn't make my sponsee listen to this. I'm not going to tell her to look, you know, listen to the tape or the recording, sorry. And that's enough. It's enough that I find joy in it and hopefully bring it to other people. I'm going to move on to Tradition 9. And in the See How 12 Traditions, Tradition 9, see how, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. So, in the AA Big Book, the long form of Tradition 9 says, similar thing, each AA group needs the least possible organization. The least possible organization. Can you imagine if a corporation had that, if a governmental body had that, if a family unit had that, the least possible organization? How is anything going to run when nobody's organizing anything? And it goes back to, you know, all the other traditions prior. You know, there's one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he expressed himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Going back to what I was talking about with step Tradition 7, you know, we've got this kind of, a governing body, but they're not necessarily governing, that's called WSO, World Service. And we have our intergroup representatives that take our opinions from each meeting bring that to our Area 10, our Phone Bridge delegation, and then, you know, our opinion, our desires to World Service. When questions come up, they don't govern. And so I was thinking, so least possible organization. The next sentence is rotating leadership is the best. And that kind of a little bit maybe speaks for itself, that I've had experiences in another 12-step program that I'm going to bring to here, that, you know, when the same couple of people, actually, let me say, I have heard this on Phone Bridges, where it feels like there's a couple of people that seem to do a lot of the service. You know, maybe they're the leaders, and it's been that way for a long time, and they start kind of having their flow, and maybe part of our little script kind of gets dropped, or things get added in. And that's not really what we do. We can do that because each meeting is autonomous. However, it needs to be a part of everybody. It's not the secretary that gets to start doing things differently. And I lead a meeting on Saturday afternoons, but, you know, I can say that I actually do that. There are times when I do change things out in the script. Sometimes we don't have a timekeeper step up, and there's a couple of sentences about time that I then skip. Just the fact that I skip having a timekeeper. I should be asking the group, is that acceptable that we not have a timekeeper today? So in this tradition, so again, going back to the groups and rotating the leadership, especially in a situation probably more face-to-face meeting where there's somebody that collects finances, that collects the seventh tradition and is carrying cash. It's important that that person rotate. You know, we need to kind of keep money, to keep an eye on what's happening with the seventh tradition. And again, so ought never be organized. Well, we may create service boards or committees directly responsible that they serve. So the convention, that is a committee, and that's made up of people on the phone bridge, people that have face-to-face meetings, you know, all across the country, which is magnificent. I had the opportunity to be a part of that, and Will,
3 minutes
coming up. Thank you. We'll also be volunteering for this coming up committee, convention committee. And one, we're not paid, going back to a prior tradition. You know, I'm doing this because I love going to the convention. And again, I have to look at my motivation. Am I doing this because I want to be popular, because I want people to tell me that, oh, thank you, you're so great for doing this? Or do I do it because I want to see the convention run and, you know, be a part of that? I don't get paid to go there. I still have to pay hotel and registration fees and everything because I am a servant. I don't get paid. And the leadership, I'm getting things all backed up because these all work together so beautifully. When questions come up about, let's say, a group doesn't want to do the seventh tradition, each group is autonomous, you know, we've decided we don't want to do the seventh tradition. We can look back at some of the other traditions about how does that help us with our primary purpose of carrying the message if we're not doing a seventh tradition and helping general service with literature. So there is an aspect of organization to this. You know, if that decision comes up in a group, you know, we don't feel like doing the seventh tradition anymore. It takes up too much time and we don't really need it. Then, you know, we're not told. This isn't law. These aren't rules. We're, you know, guided towards, well, how does this help the newcomer? How does this help see how as a whole? And then the group can kind of decide for themselves. And maybe if it's detrimental to see how as a whole, you can still meet. Maybe you can't really call yourself a see how group. And so while there is the least possible organization,
1 minute.
There is, thank you, there is an overall guiding group. And that actually is all I'm going to say about the ninth tradition. Thank you so much for letting me be a part of the presentation. And I will go ahead and pass to the person doing the tenth tradition. Thank you very much. I'm Linda M., compulsive eater in San Jose, California.
Hi, everybody. My name is Jack, and I'm a compulsive eater. I've been in the program since October of 2001. I sponsor for food inventory steps and maintenance. I have a long-term CEAH weight loss of 45 pounds since coming into the program. I have a recommitted abstinence, my fourth recommitment since coming into the program in 2001, since October of 2014. And again, as I said, I sponsor for food inventory steps and maintenance, and I'm speaking to all of you today with privilege on traditions 10 and 11. Tradition 10 states that Compulsive Eaters Anonymous How has no opinion on outside issues, hence the CEAH name ought never be drawn into public controversy. I think framing Tradition 10, the key principles or elements that are important to understand about Tradition 10 is a neutrality or avoiding controversy is one of the principles, and the other principle is having no opinions on outside issues. And by the way, I should preface everything I say about 10 and 11 today, or anything else you ever hear me say in this program, of the opinions expressed here today are my own and not necessarily those of CEAH as a whole. So just in case in our current environment, none of you ever noticed, we live in a world that thrives on controversy. When I first came into CEAH and uncovered or discovered our 10th tradition, I wondered why CEAH doesn't throw its moral weight behind any other causes other than compulsive eating. I discovered that the reason was simple. Our members come from many different backgrounds, and we have as many shades of opinion on every issue, public or private, you can imagine. And if we were to take a stand on any of these, we would immediately alienate some or all of our own membership, as well as many compulsive eaters who need us to recover, who are looking at the program as a possible road to recovery. So by allowing controversy over outside issues to drive away people who need the recovery that CEAH has to offer, we take a step backwards from our primary objective of carrying our message to the compulsive eater who still suffers. So does this mean that to maintain CEAH unity, individuals within the organization or within the group or within the membership have to sacrifice personal freedom of thought and give up every outside concern and activity? Of course not. As individuals, we're free to believe in and work for any cause we choose. The critical distinction here is that in the 10th tradition, we're asked to leave these issues outside when we walk through the doors of CHOW. Even the most worthy of causes has no place in a CHOW meeting outside of issues around compulsive eating. The CHOW recovery program is essential and important to each and every one of us. Our health and welfare and survival depends on it. Without it, many of us would be so thoroughly occupied with compulsive eating that we'd have little time or energy left to do anything else, including effectively supporting those other causes that supposedly mean so much to us. That's why we need to be very careful to guard this program from even the slightest connection with outside issues. In addition to this, ridicule or disrespectful comments about other compulsive eating programs, religions, diets, political beliefs, or other matters have no place in CHOW meetings. We don't need to belittle others to carry the message of recovery that CHOW has to offer. I once heard an expression that says, you can never make yourself taller by cutting off someone else's legs. Amen. In fact, negative talk or humorous statements at the expense of others usually destroys the positive atmosphere that's so necessary for a successful CHOW meeting. Many of us suffer from the habit of negative thinking and speaking. We need a positive atmosphere in our groups, in our group meetings.
3 minutes.
If we're to recover and sustain our recovery. So we practice the wisdom of keeping quiet about outside issues in our meetings and in our groups. So what exactly are outside issues in Tradition 10? A common one that I hear very often at CHOW meetings is, and the context for this is, many CHOW members are also members of other 12-step fellowships, such as very commonly AA. And these groups have a place in the stories that we share in our meetings. But CHOW as a whole has no opinion on any group or treatment for alcoholism, drug use, codependency, or any other compulsive disorder, and we find it preferable and even probably necessary not to get sidetracked by them in our meetings, which are dedicated of necessity to compulsive eating and recovery from compulsive eating. CHOW groups need to focus our discussions on recovery from compulsive eating and compulsive food behavior through our own 12 steps and 12 traditions, through the CHOW concept, and our tools of recovery, especially regarding sponsorship, rather than on these other issues. But what about other programs and treatments for weight loss and eating disorders? These two are especially matters about which CHOW has no opinion. As individuals, we might share our experiences with them, but as an organization, we have nothing whatsoever to say either for or against any of them. We speak about our own program and CHOW meetings, our experience with it honestly, openly, and willingly shared, offers hope and strength to other members and to other suffering compulsive overeaters who might be attending their first meeting. Our belief can be summed up in the saying, live and let live. We find we can live happier and more effective lives when we focus our attention on doing God's will each day.
1 minute.
Rather than on conflicts. So how do we uphold Tradition 10? We never give the impression that there is a CHOW opinion on diets, weight clubs, weight loss programs, or most especially on other compulsive eating 12-step groups or programs. We ain't better than nobody else, and nobody else ain't better than us. That's for them, and this is for us. We never ridicule any of these or show them disrespect. We can share our own personal experience concerning them without mentioning names or giving the impression we're in any way expressing CEA Howe's opinion. Probably it's best to express no negative opinion at all, because remember that negative thinking of any kind is a large part of our disease, so it is always best to abstain from negative thinking. In our meeting format and group practices, our group needs to be careful not to imply that CEA Howe has any opinion on any of these. In sharing at our meetings, try to help newcomers understand the 12-step program of CEA Howe better and avoid discussions that fuel any controversy. So summing it up, Tradition 10 frees us to concentrate on recovery from compulsive eating without outside conflicts. In CEA Howe, we learn we can live and even thrive with a minimum of strife and those conflicts. Little or no recovery will happen or can happen if we allow such outside issues to turn our program and meetings into a platform for debate. For this reason, the 10th tradition, having no opinion on outside issues, is one of our most carefully guarded practices in CHOP. Thanks for listening to my thoughts on Tradition 10. So Tradition 11, let me catch my breath here. Tradition 11 states that our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. The key elements, I think, in Tradition 11 are anonymity, first of all, and finally, attraction rather than promotion. At Compulsive Eaters Anonymous, how I found hope and a way out of the bondage of compulsive eating. And as with so many other things in my life, filled with the enthusiasm for that program, the CEA Howe program, I wanted to go out and rent a billboard and tell everybody who might be eating compulsively about CEA Howe. Carrying the message is an important part of the steps and the primary purpose of our program. And the 11th tradition gives us guidelines for carrying CEA Howe's message for doing so. And I need to be aware of those guidelines as I share, or any of us, I guess, begins to share our program with those outside of CEA Howe. We publicize CEA Howe without promoting it. We want people to know what CEA Howe is and how to find our meetings. So we use public media of communication. Importantly, our website, sometimes radio, television, print, videos, displays at health fairs, and social media very commonly, recently, in keeping with the CEA Howe guidelines to provide factual information at our program and our meetings without violating the principles of Tradition 11. But we don't promise CEA Howe we don't promote CEA Howe with personal appeals, celebrity endorsements, or other means of advertising or promotion and persuasion. Our use of media in a non-professional way allows us to attract those who are ready to take advantage of what we have to offer until we're ready and nobody else could sell us or anybody else on this program until we're ready and graced with the grace of God. And so it is with other people who may benefit from CEA Howe. We carry the message best when we share frankly what CEA Howe is, what our own experience has been, and respecting the 11th tradition, we respect the rights of others to choose CEA Howe for themselves. This, I believe, my opinion, is the public relations policy for the CEA Howe program. We do everything we can to tell people what CEA Howe is, how it works, and where we meet. We don't publish before and after pictures of our members in the media. We don't promise quick weight loss or guarantee results. We don't have celebrities appearing in front of the public to talk about their success with our program, inviting others to join them. In fact, Tradition 11 states that all individuals maintain personal anonymity when speaking of their CEA HAL membership in any public media of communication. And we have two options in public media around Tradition 11. This is, again, my opinion. We can avoid calling ourselves CEA HAL members, even though we might say that we are compulsive eaters. If we do this, we're free to use our full names or have our faces shown. Here the emphasis is on myself or ourselves as individuals, and we're not connected publicly with the CEHAL program. Our second option is to identify ourselves as CEHAL members, and when we do this, we make sure our faces are not shown, our last names are not used, and we're careful to honor the 12th tradition in this way. The emphasis remains on CEHAL rather than us as individuals. In dealing with the media, we sometimes make the mistake of assuming that interviewers and photographers already know about CEHAL's tradition of anonymity. They don't. They know nothing of our tradition of anonymity, usually, or any of the details, unless they're in a 12-step program themselves. So never assume that they understand what anonymity means. It's my understanding that these same principles and guidelines apply when using social media such as Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or any of the other dozens of social media programs that are out there and available for individuals or groups. When we ignore these 11th tradition guidelines, we set ourselves apart from other CEA HAL members in order to take on the role of a spokesperson, or as I like to refer to it, a hero. Ego reduction is a huge component in program recovery. And humility is one of the essential qualities that I personally need to develop in order to recover from compulsive eating. Maintaining our anonymity at the level of the public media is one important way that we practice this humility. It's one way we let go of personal ambition in order to keep ourselves in fit spiritual condition. The 11th tradition helps ensure that we don't hurt the CEA HAL program in our misguided attempts to promote it. CEA HAL's insistence on personal anonymity, refusal to promote our program through celebrity endorsements or other techniques of persuasion make it different from almost every other commercial program, all of which we see on television, especially right after the first of the year. So what we can do best is to let go of ego as much as possible and quietly do God's will. Not my will, but thy will be done. Not my way, but your way. How can we practice the 11th tradition? By remembering and practicing these principal activities. Number one, by making our group, its meeting places, or phone bridge meeting places known to other compulsive eaters in the public who might want to attend.
1 minute.
Secondly, by being careful to protect our personal anonymity and that of other CEHAL members when using public media of communication. Third, by speaking up for the 11th tradition whenever we see it being ignored or violated in our groups or meetings, which happens frequently. And finally, by practicing attraction rather than promotion. Our individual recovery as well as group unity and effectiveness depends on this unusual type of public relations. So in closing, the 11th tradition is based on faith in our program and in a higher power greater than ourselves that guides other compulsive eaters to our doors. All we really have to do is let the facts about CEA HAL and its principles and program be known and depend on our higher power and this program to attract those who can benefit by what we have to offer. In other simpler words, members of CEA HOW are anonymous. The program is not. If you go public, keep CEA HOW private. If you stay private, feel free to make CEA HOW public. When we maintain our tradition of anonymity, we ensure that CEHOW remains a spiritual program supporting all of us in recovery. And thanks very much for listening.
Thanks, Jack. This is Dave again with Tradition 12. Tradition 12, the short form. Anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all our traditions and reminding us to place principles before personalities. Spiritual substance of anonymity is sacrifice. Subordinating personal aims to the common good is the essence of all 12 traditions. Why AA or CEHOW could not remain a secret society? Principles come before personalities. 100% anonymity at the public level. Anonymity is real humility. This is from the AA 12 and 12 about Tradition 12. Because AA's 12 traditions repeatedly ask us to give up personal desires for the common good, we realize that the sacrificial spirit, well symbolized by anonymity, is the foundation of them all. But in the beginning, anonymity was not born of confidence. It was a child of our early fears. Our first nameless groups of alcoholics were secret societies. New prospects could find us only through a few trusted friends. The bare hint of publicity, even for our work, shocked us. Though ex-drinkers, we still thought we had to hide from public distrust and contempt. As the AA groups multiplied, so did anonymity problems. Enthusiastic over spectacular recovery of a brother alcoholic, we'd sometimes discuss those intimate and harrowing aspects of his case, meant for his sponsor's ear alone. The aggrieved victim would then rightly declare that his trust had been broken. When such stories got into circulation outside of AA, the loss of confidence in our anonymity promise was severe. It frequently turned people from us. Clearly, every AA member's name and story, too, had to be confidential if you wished. This was our first lesson in the practical application of anonymity. With characteristic intemperance, however, some of our newcomers cared not all for secrecy. They wanted to shout AA from the housetops and did. Alcoholics Barely Dry rushed out bright-eyed, button-holding anyone who would listen to the stories. Others hurried to place themselves before microphones and cameras. Sometimes they got distressingly drunk and let their groups down with a bang. They had changed from AA members into AA show-offs. This phenomenon of conscience really set us thinking, how anonymous should AA be? Then there was the Jack Alexander article that really put the word of AA out there, but it didn't allow the names of people to be used. They kept it 100% anonymous. And it was like Jack was saying about Tradition 11. We get the word out there that AA, that CEHOW exists and that and what our program is and what it involves. And then we let people come to us and choose us if they want. And when they're in, then we can, when they decide they want to be a part of this, then we help them out. We help them in the way that we know. And we teach them about the seven tools of abstinence and the steps and the traditions, and we go from there. But first, getting them in the door is their own choice. And not, I don't represent CEHOW. No one member represents CEHOW. CEHOW is its own organization. I like how anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all the traditions, because that is it in a nutshell. You know, Tradition 1, you know, unity. It's about unity. It's bigger than me. Not bigger, so bigger than me that it's going to crush me, but it is bigger than me that I need to protect this so others can have it, so I can have it. Tradition 2, I've been shot down in business meetings before, and I've had to take the opinion, because that opinion is my group's conscience. It's not about me. And each one of the traditions builds up to that anonymity, that how vitally important it is. So personally, I believe in the protection of the fellowship. I want to protect see how, so that it's here to help me as it's helped me this last year and a half and also these last 12 years. Like I said, I do not represent the organization. I really like the Just for Today. I really try to do this portion from Just for Today to exercise my humility and to really practice anonymity. And I'm going to read that from the Just for Today. Just for today, I'll exercise my soul in three ways. I'll do somebody a good turn and not get found out. If anybody knows of it at all, it will not count. I love that. I mean, that produces so many spiritual gifts that I can barely even talk about the list. What also has taught me that anonymity is the advanced level of anonymity lately in my life has been shutting the heck up. You know what I mean? Lately at work, I've been using my mouth less and my actions more, and that produces such phenomenal results that no amount of self-promoting could ever accomplish. So it is through Tradition 12 that I really learned that reduction of ego that I always struggled with before. I'm actually going to end Tradition 12 there and start moving toward the conclusion of the event. Okay, so I want to thank all the panelists for taking their time to participate. I know that we it took barely any work to get us all together to on the same page to do this. There was so much good information put out. Hopefully all the people that are listening got a lot out of it, and this workshop will be available on the website since it is being recorded. We've now come to the question and answer portion of the workshop. If anyone has a question, please, once I stop this little spiel, press star 6, announce yourself, and ask. There's no absence requirement to ask a question. And if any of the panelists feel like they're qualified to answer, please just hit star 6 and answer it. So what I'll do is I'll open it up for the next 11 minutes. I will stop recording at 12, but the meeting will stay open until everybody's question is answered. So I'm going to open it up for questions. Lighter question, since I'll throw a little kindle on the fire. I noticed that on our website, in order to start a meeting, there's certain requirements. We have to read the seven tools. There's four mandatory readings for a group to read when they have a meeting. Is this a violation of Tradition 4? Since any group together can call themselves a group, but if the website says that groups have to read certain things, does that violate Tradition 4?
Hello, could you please repeat your question? Thank you.
For any group wanting to start that wants to register on the website, there's required readings that have to be read at each meeting. So since there's required reading, does that violate Tradition 4, which says that only any three members getting together or any members getting together that call themselves compulsive eater can be a group? Or is that... I have my own personal opinion about this. I think that I've started AA meetings before, and I've started CHOW meetings before, and there's a slight difference, but I think it is. But I think since the traditions are suggestions, and if this is something that CHOW wants to do, then they can do it. I think it might be a good impetus maybe in the future to write their own traditions. Based on CHOW experience might be a good thing but that's just my opinion. Dave D, member of CHOW, my opinion is that we should probably someday write our own traditions because there's certain aspects of our fellowships that are different than AA's interpretation of the 12 traditions. But that's just my opinion. I was just trying to spark discussion.
Let me speak here, John, compulsive eater. CHOW is an organization, and it has certain things that define it as an organization, and I think these seven readings are one of those things. And I think if you want to have a social club, then don't read the seven things, and you can have your social club. Or if you want to have a psychological support group, a grief recovery, this or that, or whatever the purpose is, you can get by without reading these readings. But I think if you want to call yourself a CEA HAL group, then you shouldn't necessarily violate the principles of the fellowship. Of course, that being said, we could probably have a war between the different traditions, because each one of them would say me first, and I think as long as we remember that they are suggestions, and that the group has autonomy, but I think too, there is such a thing as obeying the spirit of the fellowship, as well as the letter of the law. And I think we're not about being Pharisees, but we accept anybody, and we accept any feeling, but we don't lend the CEHAL name to enterprises which are clearly not related to carrying the message that I pass.
Thanks, John. Great answer.
Dave, are you asking the question? This is Jack on that subject. Are you asking the question, are we in violation of those principles by not opening this meeting with those readings, or a new group not using the CEA?
Yeah, I was just saying, if a new group wanted to start a CEHAL meeting based on the tradition four of autonomy, and where it says any two or three people together that want to start a group can start it. I mean, based on being dictated the four mandatory readings for each group, is that against the traditions? And is that maybe cause for us to maybe write our own version of the traditions?
No, I can't imagine why anybody would want to start a group, a CEA HAL group, that didn't adhere to that. I mean, if they didn't want to adhere to those most fundamental what principles, suggestions, whatever of CEA HAL, I can't imagine that anybody would want to start a CEA HAL group. You know, they'd start a totally new group that didn't have to do that. That's just my thoughts.
Hello, David. This is Joanne, Compulsive Eater. First of all, I want to thank you guys for a very inspiring and insightful workshop today. It was really great. And your question, I know that when we were told to have those readings at the beginning of the meetings, it was to establish who we were and to make the newcomer comfortable, so that the newcomer could go into any meeting and hear how it works, the steps, the traditions, the CEHAL concept, and the seven tools every time they walked into a meeting. It's what unifies us. It's who we are. And I think that it's really, really super important to have that as part of our meeting. Thank you.
Okay. I mean, I don't want to get down the rabbit hole, but I know in AA you don't have to read any specific things. But that's why they wrote that in a tradition. Literally, an AA meeting can be started by anybody, and they can make up the format as they want. I mean, you know, hopefully they're espousing those principles, but there's no mandatory readings. But either way, I don't want to take it up. We got 3 minutes left. There must be other questions out there.
This is Suzanne, and I'd like to thank everybody for the enlightening workshop. It's great to hear different voices. But yeah, we do have to remember that we are different. We are on a program, and we are a structured and disciplined approach. And then the CA How concept, it says we accept these things as requirements, and I think sometimes we might forget that. And there are a lot of reasons why. I mean, there are certain requirements in order to register as a CA How meeting, and the information is on the website, and we are structured and disciplined, and if we don't want to be that, then we go elsewhere where there is no structure and no discipline. But for me, I need it. But I just wanted to thank everybody for today's effort. It was wonderful, beautiful. Thank you.
Dave, this is Catherine Compulsivita. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, thank you so much, everybody. It's been a wonderful workshop. And I just wanted to share something that's helped me, actually on that line that was just quoted where it says, rather we accept them as requirements for our recovery. I used to read that line like that with the emphasis on requirements. And I remember having a sponsor here one time when I was fussing and fuming about why, you know, how could we say these. This was a program of suggestions through the 12 steps and 12 traditions because it's required, not suggested. And it was suggested to me that when I think about that sentence, that I put my emphasis on accept. So it would read, rather we accept them as requirements for recovery, and to put my focus on the acceptance, not on the word requirement. And I think that has helped me. Just wanted to share that.
Oh, thank you. Yes. All right, great. Well, thank you, everybody, for participating. I'm going to hit *9 to stop recording, but the meeting will go on if people still have other comments they want to make. So stand by.